What more do you want from me?
Oh, yeah. We're right back at it, fam. And you're sitting down. You already know what it is. Word should have gotten to, should have gotten back to you by now. You should have already understood what it is. So you, when you set foot in here tonight, it should already been clear. Click, click. Now you can't leave. But we're not going to brutalize you. I told Sonny to put down the hounds for the evening. But you're going to be here with us for a while. And we're glad you're here tonight. Welcome, 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 family, to another edition of Office Hours. It's your good brother, Professor Carl Tone Jones. And I'm rocking live here in the 215 on Philly Fridays. And it is very, you know, the temperature sways, but you know what it is. It's currently 43 degrees here. And we're expecting the temperature to drop down to the low 20s tonight. So, you know, if you're especially in the Northeast Corridor, you bundle up. As Sonny, you know, as Scarface would say, make sure you dress warm. It's going to be cold tonight. But I want to shout out everybody first and foremost. It is 5 minutes after the hour. We're here on Fet Life Station at FetLifeStation.com. Be sure y'all spell it right, man. I had to go to somebody earlier. They had tied into a fetish website. So I had to let them know, you know, the spelling matters. Also, for those of you who are catching this stream and you're using one of the streaming services, make sure you check us out at True Crime Radio Story, at True Crime Radio Story on any of your major streaming platforms. All right. But yeah, it's been a wild week, man. I had as you know, some of y'all know, I had been under the weather a little bit. Nothing major, but you know, stuff happens, man. You know, especially in today's climate, when you're dealing with a lot of people, man, you every once in a while you catch a stray. And you know, got a bit of a stomach bug, man. That joint takes it out of you a little bit, man. You know, let y'all know your brother's doing fine. He's doing fine tonight, you know what I'm saying? I want to give a special shout out to my big brothers. I consider them Jegners of mine. Brother Eric Keith Grimes, better known as Brother Shamari. And he is more than that, but he's a radio host here at WRD Radio in Philadelphia. And my good brother Jeff Weaver, who is the author of Five Fists No Compromise. And they had a very spirited conversation about the death of Malcolm X and what that meant. And they basically identified it as the assassination of Malcolm X was the assassination or the castration of black manhood. And I thought that conversation was and is very necessary. And they actually held it, you know, true to the day that Malcolm was assassinated in 1965. So I thought that was a very important conversation because it explored a lot. First of all, it explored Malcolm's legacy. It explored what made him the man he was. It also, you know, was indemnified. when on I believe it might have been Founders Day at the Apollo in New York City, when Malcolm's wife was asked to speak, you know, and she spoke up about her husband. And you know, she told the story of how when Malcolm was born, when Malcolm was added, you know, what he added to the Nation of Islam. As many people attribute Malcolm's ascension to the fact that he was a part of the Nation of Islam. But she told the story about how Malcolm actually literally built the Nation of Islam to what it was. You know, I thought that was very important. You know, our dear sister Betty Sabazz, the fact that the Nation of Islam were three mosques, they had three mosques when he entered and joined, and they were primarily senior citizens, to by the time he was exiled from the Nation of Islam, it's very important we understand that he was exiled, that the Nation of Islam had a mosque in every major city in America and many abroad. And many of the trainings, the people who learned in terms of the ways of the nation were due to the teachings of Malcolm. You know, Malcolm X actually came here in Mosque number 12 here in Philadelphia. Malcolm actually lived here. Everywhere he went and built the mosque, he lived there for a little bit, for a period. He lived here in Philadelphia as they built up Mosque number 12, right there in North Philadelphia on Ridge Avenue. So, you know, it was a very spirited conversation. It speaks to something too, though, because it also spoke to how, you know, at this particular time, how important it is that our women understand the importance of breeding, you know, warriorhood into men, and how, you know, this concept of the single mother epidemic that's facing the black community, how impactful has been in terms of the emasculation of men, you know. And so you have these young men out here now in the streets, and they're trying to prove their manhood by killing each other because they have not been taught properly how to be a man. And, you know, as you can imagine, on a college campus, because they did this presentation at the Community College of Philadelphia, which I was the moderator, this conversation, you know, actually, you know, drew a few eyes, and, you know, some of the brothers even had a hard time understanding or digesting the fact that, you know, the teachings of a warrior can come from a woman, and she can impart them on a young male that eventually will lead him into his warriorhood as a man. And so the stories, you know, in coming down from, you know, Kemetian stories, Asar and Aset, you know, and the teachings of Heru, you know, all the way down to the Haitian Revolution, you know, when Dessalines was taught by an African warrior sister by the name of Toya. And we can just, you know, it goes along the line that, you know, if you teach your boys to be warriors, they will defend the kingdom. And so some sisters get it, right? And I want to play some clip. I want to play this clip. All right. Pause that music, because y'all know we got to pause the music in order to play that clip. So I want y'all to pay attention to what this sister is saying. Hold tight.
Men have always been the prize. Women, no, let me, hold on, hold
better
on.
Finish.
Let me finish our villages. But as for this conversation, I will admit I am one of the few people who did not know who Simone Biles was until this situation. However, I want to say something, and I know some of y'all might feel a way, get mad at me. Men have always been the prize. women, no, let me, let me finish. Men have always been the prize. And I'm going to explain what I'm saying. Women marry who they can, men marry who they want. You can get offended by the statement, but if you really sit down and you think about it and you be honest with yourself, that is a very valid statement. Also, not only that, but by him saying that he is the prize, that does not make her not a prize. I myself am raising a young man. I'm raising my son is 7 years old. He is a miniature Einstein. He has manners more than his manners are beyond most adults that I've ever met. His style of dress, his respect of himself as well as others. I'm instilling in him his faith, his spiritualness. I'm instilling in my son to be a prize, especially with these days the way that women are raising these young girls, and it's unfortunate, but. And also the numbers, it's always been since the beginning of time, women will fight over a man, you know what I'm saying? But they'll accept, but at the same time, they're going to accept, like back in the traditional days, that as long as the house is taken care of and he pays all the bills, he can have those 2-3 families up the street. You know what I'm saying? Men have always been the prize. We have gotten to a point where we disrespect our men so much. I worry so much about what the world is going to look like when my son becomes of age to date and to court and to marry. Because I will never let any of your daughters tell my son that he is not the prize. That will never be a thing. And if you have sons, nephews, whatever the godchildren, you should not ever tell your son, oh, do you guys see what type of young girls are being raised? So you're telling these young girls that they're a prize over the son that you're putting your time, that you're actually the man who's supposed to be the provider that you guys are looking for, the man who's supposed to be the protector that you guys are looking for, and you just want to sit back and live a soft life. He's not the prize. That will never make sense to me. And I'll leave it there and let you guys marinate on that.
Now, as you can imagine, that sister felt some heat. In one of the comments of that video that I looked at, it spoke on the fact that that sister, they were asking, well, where's her ring? And the sister had responded to them, letting them know that the reason she doesn't have a ring is because she's a widow. You see, the first line of defense, you know, from the sisterhood was to shame this sister, was to insult this sister, not knowing her story. Prior to knowing her story, the assumption was, who are you to give me advice when you don't have a ring? About what a man is and about the price or the prize of a man. And I think that's very disingenuous when you start looking at how a sister who speaks up the value of black men and actually acknowledge the fact that the way these young ladies are being raised right now, they're not in a place to be a prize. They're not being put in a position to be a prize. And that the fact of the matter is, the amount of disrespect and to recognize the amount of disrespect that brothers are dealing with, you know, and so, but here's another sister. And she also has a point to make about the value of a man versus, you know, this whole push towards being single and liberated and educated and moving her own power. Here, I'll let you hear from her voice.
If I knew that dating was going to be this bad. When I was in college and my parents was like, focus on that education. The boys will always be there. Don't focus on the boys. Get that degree. I would have never gotten that degree. I could have skipped a couple classes. I could have failed a couple classes. And I could have been married, 2 kids by now, working on the third. I can't believe I wasted my good years, my good body. Ooh, and the body was bodying back then. So that I can get a high class education. Just for me to be broke and single? If I knew that dating was going to be this bad.
And this is a beautiful sister, by the way, if I don't say it myself. So I can only imagine what she's talking about in terms of, you know, how she might have looked 10 years ago. And I think that may be what she's referring to. But the community has been under the control of the sisterhood for God knows how long. you know, at least since the mid 80s. And it's to the point where our women have identified themselves. They've been put in the pole position of our community since the castration of Malcolm X. Since the assassination of Malcolm X, which was the castration of black manhood. And, you know, you even had videos, interviews, and clips where, you know, brothers were referring to the fact that when Malcolm was alive, you know, it created an atmosphere where black men could be men again. Let's be clear about something. We live in America. America, the way America was built and designed, it was so that black men never moved to the point where we can mature to manhood. It was always put in a place to castrate us, to have us moving around so we never be able to ascend in our own power. Do you not realize all the laws and policies that have been put in place since the inception of this country to prevent black men from moving forward? The whole concept of race was put in place because black men and white men got together back in the 1600s and started raiding northern plantations. Look up the history between the African slaves and the indentured servants of that were here from pretty much from Ireland. Look that up. Research that. Research how they were raiding plantations because they both were tired of being mistreated. Neither was getting their freedom dues. Look up how the concept of race was put into place. And how the concept of race was created so that the Irishman could join his fellow Europeans. And then that's how they created the whole concept around race. Y'all gonna learn tonight why they call me the professor. It ain't always about because I'm able to distinguish between this whole concept of, you know, the gender struggles and the gender confusion in the black community. I've been doing this for a long time. Y'all gonna get this work tonight. So y'all look that up. The plans that were put in place to welcome the Irishmen into the European threshold. They had the concept, create the concept of race, in which they created. That's the first time in history the terms white and black were put into the lexicon in regards to a race. Other than that, prior to that, you were identified by your nation of origin, your country of origin. That's how you were identified. But you're now identified as race, through your race. So, you know, this is why it's important to know who you are. And that's going to be a big point in the rest of this conversation as we go forward in the rest of this conversation. That's going to be a big point. But the sisterhood has forgotten who they are. But they've been allowed to step into a place, that vacuum, that leadership vacuum. And they have been propelled. And one thing that is really puzzling to me is the lack of understanding of what that means. We've seen historically how the institution system of white supremacy has always looked to separate and remove people from their position and place of power, and to remove them from their protection in order to isolate them, so that when it's time to take them down, they get slayed like dragons of all the little folklore of Christmas past. So, you know, and we've seen a lot of it, of what's taking place. And one of the things that has happened since, you know, we have our sisters who are in this delusion of thinking that they now are the primary opposition to white men who operate and dominate the institution system of white supremacy. Now, you don't even see white women trying this shit. But our women, you know, have been empowered, ironically, by the same force that they look to take down. And it is mystifying to me. I mean, who do you think was behind sending Gloria Steinem into the back of rooms, the back of meetings where the Black Panther Party were operating, and sending others like her to corrupt the minds of black women, to believe in that they too should be the ones running and operating in terms of the leadership of those particular movements, and that they themselves should be empowered enough to take over those movements. Who do you think are the ones? Who is the money? You know, remind me. Who is the money behind, you know, pushes like Black Lives Matter, where they themselves castrated black men in their particular movement as they benefited and profited off of the lives, or the deaths, I should say, of young black men? A whole movement predicated off of the deaths of black men, yet and still, when you went to their website, their whole focus and goal was to destroy the patriarchal family unit, the nuclear family unit. And the only thing they wanted to remove was the men. So, but we just want to forget and ignore that George Soros was the money behind the Black Lives Matter movement. What about the Me Too movement? You know, Tarana Burks, she was the face of the Me Too movement for 10 years. It got no traction. But Alyssa Milano decides to go forth and start talking about, next thing you know, this whole Me Too movement that supposedly was aimed at white predators in the film industry became the, you know, all of a sudden black men became the face of this. Who sponsored that? Who co-opted that? And then, you know, I mean, we can go down the list, you know, Black Girl Magic. Who sponsored and paid for all that? You got to start asking yourselves, like, the, you know, sometimes we can get drunk with the illusion or delusion of power. And so you started seeing memes come up where, you know, black girls would be, you know, in a race. And it would be this obstacle course. There would be a bear claw attached to her ankle. And she'd be racing a white man. Well, the whole concept of that is delusional in itself, because the white man doesn't see you as competition. And so we're starting to see it now. And what's happening, you know, and what they were able to do. And you know, let's not forget about the billions of dollars in grants that were used to promote black women as entrepreneurs. You know, Goldman and Sachs putting a $10 billion grant out. And supposedly they spent all $10 million last year. Like the last year of it, you know, it was distributed last year in order to help, you know, black women further separate themselves from their protection. And we've seen multiple times where sisters were saying, you know, I remember when Ice Cube had his plan for Black America, and he went on a show with Fox's Fox Soul channel, right? Fox had soul. And he had a conversation with, I believe they were the Cocktail Queens. And they said, well, wasn't here specifically for black women. He said, well, you're black, so anything for black people includes black women. And they said, no, we need some separate initiatives for black women. In other words, further separating yourself from the collectiveness of your power. And this is, you know, when we've seen it, right? And we've seen it, and this is what that looks like, right? This is what it looks like when it all falls down, right? When you separate yourself from the power of your men and for protection of your men, all right? We've seen it with Marilyn Mosby, right? Well, I was a personal fan of. She was a prosecutor, state prosecutor in Maryland, right? And she was the one that tried the police officers for the murder of Freddie Gray. I was down there on those streets. I was at the corner of North and Penn right before they tear gassed the entire corner. I was on the street. I drove down that narrow alley in which they ambushed those young men that was coming from school. These were middle school students. These weren't even high school students. These were middle school students. And the police, out that narrow driveway, the news coverage, the pictures you got from the television doesn't do it no justice. That single vehicle lane, pretty much an alley, right across from the Madalvin Mall. The same street where that young, where that woman went there and emasculated her son for defending his community against cops who were attacking them, and was championed as Mother of the Year. Many of y'all don't know, but she was actually investigated behind that. CPS investigated her behind that, and she had to deal with some consequences behind being Mother of the Year for that. Many of y'all don't know. They didn't want to show y'all that part. But Mary Mosby was arrested recently for doing what everybody else did, getting some of that pandemic money. And I'm pretty sure she was singled out because of the position she took against the Baltimore Police Department and trying those four officers for the murder of Freddie Gray. But see, she was with her husband. Still not under the protection of the community, though, because we don't move and function like a community or a nation. Then you got Tiffany Hingert, who is the mayor of the village of Dalton out there in the south side of Chicago, the Southlands of Chicago, as they call it. And she's going haphazardly with the money, spending over $150,000 on a truck, a Chevy Tahoe, out of the people's money, taking lavish trips to Vegas and New Orleans and all over the place. Want the people's money, shutting down businesses on some Gestapo type style of operating in office. And now she's facing charges. She has the FBI breathing down her throat because it's become a national story. And the type of corruption that she has going on right now is ridiculous. She's locked out all of the different county officials, so they can't even see the books. They can't even see the budget and how the money's being spent. She even locked them out of their office for the time being and had them escorted out by the police. And last but not least, because there's dozens, right? You got Fannie Willis. I don't know if anybody's been paying attention, but Fannie Willis, who is the prosecutor state I believe it's what's that township down there in Georgia? It's not Decatur. I forget the township in Georgia. But give me 1 second because I want to be good on my information. I believe it's Fulton County. Thank you, Fulton County. And she decided that she was going to be bold enough to bring charges up on Donald Trump for, stealing an election. And now she's the one that's been on trial as they determine whether or not they're going to remove her as the prosecutor and disqualify her. And they dug in her bag, determined that she hired somebody she was having a sexual affair with, a married man. And in the process of doing so, was sponsoring trips. So, you know, sponsoring trips with him, which sort of like it falls into some form of illegality. So, you know, all this is talking about the fact that these, you know, sisters have placed them, put themselves in a position where they can't even be defended. You know, because they don't understand or recognize the history of isolation. You know, when the predators hunt, they hunt the pack, and they do so in hoping to create a situation where somebody will a member of the pack will isolate themselves, or, you know, run away from the herd. And then they focus, once they have them, you know, isolated, then they focus their attack on the isolated prey. And that prey rarely ever survives the encounter. This is the importance of understanding Black history, though. And understanding what your history is. But see, when you try to separate yourself from your history, and this is why, you know, I tell men, and like I said, because the conversation I'm having tonight is all for the brothers. You know, brothers, y'all have to try to build with women who have a concept of what nation building is. And see, the ones that are out here searching and trying to be, you know, career chasers or trying to establish themselves out here in the world, instead of thinking about the nation, thinking about what's best for the nation and the community and so forth, those sisters are not going to be good for you. Because those sisters are always going to be focused on their ambition, and their ambition stretches, their purpose is not you. Fannie Willis said herself that a man is not a plan. A man is a companion. A companion on whose journey? You know, you only talk about companions on, you know, when you're going on trips. Well, where are you going? And who's riding? Whose journey are you going on? That's not your move. That's not, you know, that's everything against the nature of what a man is. And in the Black community, we operate, you know, in a total opposite order of what nature is. And so, you know, and this is why you have to understand your place as a man. And your place as a man is not submission to any other group of men. Let me tell you what submission, right? Let me tell you what submission is, right? What submission sounds like when you're a man. And let me tell you what it sounds like. This is what submission sounds like.
History Month, you find
ridiculous.
Why?
You're going to relegate my history to a month?
Oh, come on.
What do you do with yours? Which month is White History Month?
Well,
come on, tell me.
Well, I'm Jewish.
Okay, which month is Jewish History Month?
There isn't one.
Oh, why not?
Yeah.
Do you want one?
No.
I don't either. I don't want a Black History Month. Black history is American history.
How are we going to get rid of racism until...
Stop talking about it. I'm going to stop calling you a white man.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you to stop calling me a Black man.
I know you as Mike Wallace. You know me as Morgan Freeman.
I don't like the idea of Black History Month because it gives one...
Okay. That's part of what submission sounds like. Hold on, y'all. I got more because I want to address it. And that was Morgan Freeman, by the way. For those of you who don't know, that was Morgan Freeman. But I got some more. And this is from our good, he's an ancestor now. And shout out to my brother, Joseph Ward, who I snatched that clip off of and On the Shoulders of Giants. Y'all should have checked out our episode earlier as we talked about this concept. But if y'all didn't, rest assured, you can go to his channel right after this broadcast and check out On the Shoulders of Giants. Check out our broadcast on why we should learn about Black history. All right, but this is Dr. Amos Wilson and his response to that.
What is going on with Cornel West? Who says that Black leaders, serious Black leaders, must be race transcending? The hell you going to be a serious Black leader and be race transcending? You know, but that's the dilemma of the assimilationists. They want race and not race at the same time. They want to organize Black people based on Blackness so that they can get rid of Blackness. They want to use your Black interests, your Black feelings, and your Black identity to advance their program so they can tell you later that Blackness does not matter.
Remember, if you are assimilated and integrated into white America, and you are dependent upon white America, when white America falls, you fall even harder.
And that was a shout out to my brother Joseph Ward, who followed up the clip from Dr. Amos Wilson. And so this is why Black history matters, and this is why men, we need to understand who we are. Because when you don't really operate in your masculinity, when you don't operate as a man, you allow yourself to assume or accept a lot of things that are below your standard. As you heard the sister say earlier, you know, in the concept about who is the prize, I'll let y'all determine that. But in terms of what you will accept as a man, historically speaking, a man is supposed to be uncompromising when it comes to his manhood. That means a man doesn't submit specifically to men of other nations. Now, as a man myself, I only submit to God. That's the only submission you'll see from me. Now, I can't speak for anybody else's spiritual system, but or how their spiritual practice is, but mine is very simple. I have a relationship with God, and that's between me and God. as all relationships, you know, should be. But, you know, I want to talk about this notion about Black history because Malcolm was the last time where we actually saw a Black man speaking unapologetically in regards to manhood. I mean, we've seen others come after him, for sure. Khalid Muhammad. We've seen some others come after him before, for sure. But Malcolm was the most unapologetic and unafraid man that walked the planet. And for many people to not understand what that is, to not understand what that looks like, you know, we get into this place, man, where we have to dig deep and to get back into that place. Because a lot of things that, you know, Black men have been seen as been assumed to be passive. That's why Black men get attacked everywhere we go. When you start to understand who you are, historically speaking, people start to come to take shots at you. People start to try to chop you down at your knees. Because nobody wants to see a Black man standing tall and in his own power. When Dr. Carter G. Woodson identified the issues in the education and the miseducation of the Negro, do you know he was ostracized by many Black contemporaries at that particular time because they told him he was too radical? Because he stood on his toes. He stood 10 toes down on the fact that conditions need to change for Black people. Educated Negroes, as he put it, were miseducated, therefore ill-equipped to educate Black people on how to build power. And the only purpose of education was to build and improve the conditions of your nation. It wasn't to improve your conditions in an assimilated order. It wasn't to improve, because when you do that, you basically fuel the engine of the thing, the very thing that oppresses you. Empowering these entities do nothing to empower you and your nation. This is why we go back to the family, because the family is the first, you know, it's the origin of a nation. You can't build, as a man, you can't build with a woman whose priorities are vacations and trips and leisure, you know, the soft life and things like that. And you can't build with a person like that. Not if you want to not if you strive to be a nation builder. In my conversations with brothers, most brothers I talk to in some way, shape, or form identify with nation building. Identify with being part of a community. Even if you aspire to be a local, you know, a Pee Wee League or coach, or, you know, even you aspire to, you know, gather the young brothers around and to create a boys club or to create, you know, Boy Scouts or whatever. That's a form of nation building. That's a form of doing what's best for the community outside of your household. That's what men do. But you can't do that if you're nesting with a woman who has aspirations beyond that. If you have to be her entertainment, you're not the man she wants. And if a person is talking about they want, the, you know, if the first, if in the top three things they talk about, right? Typically, you'll get somebody to say, "I want a man to respect." This is what a woman say: "I want a man to respect me. I want a man to do this." And then by the third one, you know, travel and leisure. You know, I want to be able to travel. Well, the wanting to be able to travel is a sponsor. At that point, you are going to be sponsoring the entertainment, brothers. That ain't for you. Especially in this economy. And I've heard the silliest things, like men need to get their weight up or you need to get your money up. How the hell do you get your money up in an economy that is stripping everybody of their access to resources? How the hell do you do that? You know what I'm saying? You know, how the hell do you do that? You know what I mean? We're in a place right now where we're not even economically speaking. We're not at a place right now where you can be sitting there taking your well-earned money and resources for granted. And though I don't place that as sort of like the top priority in terms of how you should be dealing with people, it is important. The gaslighting, the shaming. I had a sister that I saw recently on Facebook post this. Ladies, there's a shortage of heterosexual black men who have their shit together. And I'm sitting here reading it like, where is this coming from? And what does that superimpose? Because I know a lot of good, decent brothers. What does it say about the ladies that many of these men are deciding to not even approach them? There's a whole lot more good heterosexual men who are choosing peace over your posterior, young ladies. Especially if it comes with drama, chaos, it comes with multiple children out of wedlock, which is pretty much the norm. I don't know if you can meet a woman over 25 and assume she doesn't have children in our community. And then you have the career woman who's in her 30s and doesn't have any children, but no prospects either, because now she's at an age right now where she's facing geriatric pregnancy. And brothers, don't be shamed. And here's the thing, you could turn off the faucet whenever you want to. You could decide not to focus on that. You could decide to focus on your own dreams, your own, you know, aspirations. You know, specifically if you're between the ages of 30 and 50, 35, those are the times that you are actually in a place where you're actually building. You're actually building yourself to be the man, because you know the time and things of that nature, the what they call it, the biological clock is different for men. Most men don't become millionaires. The ones that become millionaires until they're in their 50s. Most women don't become millionaires until they divorce a man that's a millionaire. There's a difference. You have to recognize your role and understand your place in the society, brothers. So this whole concept that Morgan Freeman brought up. Why does Black History Month matter? Why does it not matter? All these people are totally ignorant to the fact that, like I said before, Dr. Carter, well, I didn't say in this episode, but previous episode, Dr. Carter G. Woodson was one of the ones that was the creators of what was called Negro History Week, which was later expounded to Negro History Month and then Black History Month Week and then Black History Month. I was old enough to where it was used to be Black History Week. And then it became Black History Month. And one of the things I'm seeing is we don't respect the things we take and claim. Dr. Carter G. Woodson, his brothers of Omega Psi Phi and Chicago University, they didn't ask anybody. They took this. This was a step of manhood. And then for you to be an 80-year-old man, well, he was in his 70s, I presume, at the time of this interview. But for you to be a, you know, because I'm pretty sure, I'm not sure if his ideology has changed since then or his mindset has changed since then. But for you to want to step away from that because you don't want to deal with that fight, Black history is American history. You're right. In one sense, it is American history. But the reason it was not, the reason Black History Week was created, or Negro History Week was created, is because it was not included in American history. So we wedged our way and forced our way into there so it could be identified as American history. Not just American history either, because it was world history. Black people had an impact on the world in terms of its achievements, accomplishments, inventions, and so forth. Over 70% of things we use right now were created at the hands of somebody Black. And these are important things. Refrigerated cars, refrigerated, you know, stoplights, you know what I'm saying? Latches to keep your trains together. These are things that matter. The whole World Wide Web. These are things we use right now. So to step away from that is a submission to something that you believe is greater than you. Well, as a Black man, nothing outside of God is greater than me. I'm the first man to walk on this earth. You know what I'm saying? To be gaslit, I'm not going to allow anybody. So brothers, don't allow people to gaslight you. You know, the sign language, those days, has been exposed. It's over. The shame, the insult, the guilt, the need to be right. Those things are not what empowers you, should empower you. And this is when you stand in your own power, understand you need to stand with other brothers in their power too, because we don't have anybody else that's going to have our back. So you need to align yourself with a group of brothers that are also at their place where they're standing in power. And as you link up, I ain't saying you got to get along with everybody, but understand, you know, this is war. And I've often stated this is war. You know, in war, sometimes, you know, you make uncomfortable allegiances and allies. You have to understand what that means. So we stop giving our power to things that don't empower us. We stop recognizing entities that see us with disrespect and vain and vulgarity. And we have to understand that. This is why it was so important that, you know, when I first opened the show up with, was talking about the presentation that was discussing how the execution, the assassination of Malcolm X, was indeed the castration of Black manhood. And don't think for a second that there wasn't a global phenomenon, because men all over the globe were killed because of their allegiance to Malcolm X. But those men stood on a principle under the concept of building a Pan-African Union. And because they were on the cusp of it, that's why they were taken out. But understand something, it's better to live on your, to die on your feet than live on your knees. You can't allow your enemies to subjugate you to assimilating into their cause, which is further genocide for your future generations. You know, I'm not necessarily a Trekkie, but I did watch Star Trek a lot. The recent Star Trek, there was this race of an entity, they identified as the Borg. And the Borg would do nothing but go into go from planet to planet, and they would then, you know, take over. And when I mean take over, they would literally snatch up all the people that belong to that planet, and they would assimilate them. Like, you know, the Borg was some sort of like some type of they were this entity, like a robot type. it was a mesh of flesh and robot, whatever. But they would then assimilate that culture, and then they would own it, but it wouldn't do nothing but serve the growth of the Borg. And so the Borg, that was their goal, to assimilate. Their whole station, their whole thing was, you know, resistance is futile. You will be assimilated. Resistance is futile. That was their whole slogan. That's what they would march onto your ship with. And so, and they didn't give a damn who they were assimilating. Their whole thing was about conquest. They didn't even have a rhyme or reason for it. It wasn't about the extension of their race or anything. So, but that's what you deal with when you deal with white supremacy. I often think a lot of these TV shows are really, you know, cleverly discussing, you know, the wickedness and the evil of white supremacy. And so you can't allow yourself to be assimilated as a black man. Because eventually, as soon as you start feeling your own power, they will isolate you from your people, like they did with Bill Cosby. Isolate you from your own people, and then they'll take you down. And then when you look back for who's your support, you've been cut off from your support. And this false allegiance, these false supporters, these people who are identifying. And that's what our sisters are dealing with right now. They're finding out slowly but surely that they didn't have any support in any of these places. Fannie Willis jumped out on this, like she jumped out of the plane without a parachute on faith that the Democratic Party would be assisting her in taking down Donald Trump. She thought this was going to be a major step forward for her. Now, the fact that she's on trial right now, that she's having these hearings, debating as to whether or not she's going to be removed from the case, and then I'm pretty sure they're going to challenge her for the bar, to challenge her license as a lawyer. Where are those Democrats that were cheering her on, or that she was trying to impress? Right? Where are they at? Mary Mosby, where are the Democrats? Right? Tiffany Hengert, you shook hands with the president. The president is not speaking up or defending you in any of this mess you're getting into. And that's why, you know, and brothers, a lot of y'all are going to, you know, y'all, a lot of y'all going to want to come in and cape for this situation. I feel for you. Because morally speaking, I understand. But I think sometimes a hard lesson needs to be learned. And it needs to be learned harshly. So with that said, man, I want to thank y'all all for tuning in tonight to another edition of Office Hours with your good brother, Professor Carl Tone Jones, here on Fet Life Station, FetLifeStation.com. And like I said, you can always catch us streaming on True Crime Story Radio. True Crime Radio Story. With that said, my good brother Lester, peace.